This is the homily for Pentecost Sunday, 2026, at St. Anselm's Abbey. The readings for the day's Mass were the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. First letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians, chapter 12, verses 3 to 7 and 12 to 13. And the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verses 19 to 23. The homilist was Father Gabriel Myers.
And so we arrive at the third and last great Christian feast, with virtually no preparation. There is no four-candle Advent wreath. There is no 40-day Lent of fast prayer and alms. We arrive suddenly at Pentecost, like the wind came. The wind represents spirit. Here it is, then the wind is gone. The Paschal candle is taken away after Vespers, with less literalism than in the old days, when the Paschal candle representing Jesus was taken out after the reading of the Ascension Gospel. So you could say Pentecost is the last and least of the big three, because the church is not filled with holly and ivy. There are no lilies. There is no creche or extra candles. No excessive alleluias, just the color red, which is almost never seen on a Sunday, to remind us of the little flames on the emboldened apostles' heads. Perhaps this understated quality is part of the message. Historically, among the three great feasts, there is Christ taking on flesh and the sweetness of a newborn in the middle of winter. Piercing deeper in the spring, there is the victory over the last enemy, which is death and annihilation. And then there is the everyday God, the Spirit, who seems little in evidence and causes us doubt and uncertainty. Does God leave us orphans? Does God leave us to deal with the mess of this world's existence without much help from above? Is God really as remote as it so often feels? The drama of Pentecost Day, at least in the story, erupting in languages, tornado, and fire, seems far from our experience of the Spirit, which is expressed evasively and teasingly to Nicodemus, who brings his questions by night. The timing of night represents this Pharisee authority's own desire to leave mental and emotional darkness behind. Nicodemus wants to come into the full radiance of truth, light, and satisfaction, which he senses in Jesus. And so we relate to Nicodemus's deep desire for meaning and wholeness. We commend Nicodemus for his humility in seeking truth from the other side, when he himself is the establishment and should be satisfied with his side's own answers. So it seems very unfair, at least to me, for Jesus to play head games and riddles with Nicodemus. You're middle-aged, Nicodemus. You are a has-been. What you need is to be born again. Nicodemus feels the discussion immediately rise over his head, and he flails. How can I exchange my wrinkles, my used-up inner self, for the sweet rosy flesh of a baby? Enter spirit into the dialogue. Nicodemus, the wind blows where it wants to. The wind is beyond the control of your rigid philosophy, which can only pin something down when it is dead and over. You hear the sound of the wind. You feel its gentle caress, perhaps on your cheek. But then the wind is gone. You cannot grab a handful of it to hang on to and preserve. So it is with the Spirit. How totally disappointing and annoying. Don't we feel that to realize that God's reality in the present is almost entirely perceived in hindsight? Oh, if only we could recognize and see and understand God in the moment. Oh, if only we had something to press between the pages of our journal so we could revisit it. Oh, that our experience would be different from Jacob's, who only realizes that God has been here in this place, wrestling with me, dropping down a ladder from heaven. But Jacob realizes all this only after waking up. I realize the Spirit only in hindsight. We associate the invisible, uncontrollable wind with the Spirit, and we find in the very etymology of the biblical word for Spirit that this wind is more than climate, more than one of the ancient elements of earth, air, water, and fire, which the philosophers believed chemically make up the universe. This double meaning, wind and breath, breeze and respiration, is right there complexifying the guttural Hebrew word ruach. And it is right there also in the more elegant Greek word pneuma, which that strange PN sound at the beginning, from which we derive, rather unspiritually, the pneumatic jackhammer that uses air to crush concrete. Having survived 6 days in hospital earlier this month, and the harder, tedious, undramatic spirit work of recovering after that 7-hour surgery, I am conscious of the danger of coming out of hospital sicker than I went in. But thankfully, I avoided the respiration problem of P. pneumonia. I have somehow also been pondering that in the life of the Spirit, it is true, what does not kill you builds you up and makes you stronger. Ruach, pneuma. They come up in the fourth sentence of the Bible's first page. Everything was void and dark. The Ruach of God, his breath and spirit, moved and breathed on the face of that darkness. So when God said, "Let there be light," there was light, and it was so good. How we love the light. The Logos, Christ the Word, speaks the light. The Spirit breathes the light. And the beauty of the universe, when the light is turned on, we see in miniature, right here, right now, available to us all. On the second page of Scripture, there is a more primitive, unscientific account of beginnings. God is making mud pies, or Play-Doh dolls and soldiers. But when he places his mouth over a nose of one of these little figures, the breath and the spirit go into the lifeless clay. So the dolls and soldiers become, like the spirit, uncontrollably alive. It may be more accurate to say that God breathed a kiss through our mouths to endow the magic of existence, as happens in CPR. Such a kiss would be even more marvelous than the warmth and radiance of light. We could do so much with tracing the wind, breath, thematic thread through Scripture. We would read Ezekiel's Valley of Dry Bones. We would read, as was referred to in the first reading, Joel's dreams, given only to the young of heart. The sort of vision that breathed life into Martin Luther King's picture of what communal life in our country could be. In this regard, we must do more than lament the crushing of this dream in our debased society at present. We must ask for newer, stronger dreams. Which brings me to end with Elijah and his experience of spirit, so appropriate to our violent times. It is an entire and complete mystery to me that Elijah is termed the greatest prophet of Israel when he was so bloodthirsty. I dislike him more than any figure in Scripture, slitting the necks of 750 foreigners at the base of Mount Carmel. What can this possibly mean today when the future of humans on earth absolutely depends on tolerance amid diversity? I condemn Elijah's approach there unconditionally. But I will also say the spirit which almost killed Elijah taught him something. This brave macho man runs away from the fury of Jezebel, who lost all her prophets, and who can blame her for wanting some retribution? Elijah ends up on Horeb, where he does nothing but whine and blame. How well do we know those behaviors from certain power players? "I have done your will, O God," he said. But has he? For the Spirit's guidance is often ambiguous and counterintuitive. God shows just this by insisting that Elijah leave his cave and watch the fireworks display, which used to be signs of divine manifestation. God shows him a forest fire, a tornado, an earthquake, things in our sophisticated scientific society we still cannot control. This fireworks display happens several times until even blockheaded Elijah can understand that spirit is not in these knock-em-down phenomena. The spirit is in the tortured whisper, the crushed silence, the still small voice. However you name it, it is hard to interpret the still small voice, and yet we must try. Elijah finds some very surprising interpretations in this still small voice. 1, stop blowing up your enemies. 2, walk down the mountain and have the courage to build some solid institutions that are not your ego idols. 3, do not cling to power, anoint a successor. Each of these is very hard work, lonely, and not giving instant gratification. Yet, they, like all things of the Spirit, bring things that will last. The invisible Spirit offers that if we interpret the messages that Spirit sends. If we listen in the deep places of our heart to the tortured whisper, the crushed silence, the still small voice. If we really listen.